What a powerful video, what a powerful impact that Fellowship of Christian Athletes is making in communities, schools, all around this nation and the world. And I'm very grateful that they would have me back again. Les Duckel called and said, actually, I called and asked, could I come back? He said, Tony Evans, we heard you last year and you still have work to be done. I said, I really want to come back, Les. He said, send me a CD. Let me hear you how you have improved in your teaching. So I sent him a CD. He said, you're moving in the right direction. But this is the 60th anniversary. This is really the big one. And we really need the creme de la creme. We need the best of the best. And you're just not ready yet. I said, Les, I'll come for free. He said, now you're ready. So I'm glad for this opportunity to be able to be here with you today. A number of you have come up to me and asked me about more information on this thing called Destiny. And again, we have a book, we have a Bible study, DVD, CDs that go into a lot more than I can go into in these couple of days at tonyevans.org. And so that's our national ministry, and you can get that as well, the whole slew of other stuff at tonyevans.org. But it's an honor to be able to share with you today. I remember in seminary that we'd been given a major assignment, And I decided that I was determined I was going to make an A. And I went to work, and I did it. I mean, I stayed up all-nighters working with the original languages. I wanted to impress the prof. Turned in the paper and was pretty confident about the grade I would receive. Only to discover when the paper came back, at the top was written, I see the hard work. Below it, in red, a big zero. Below it, the line said, but you did the wrong assignment. It would be a tragedy to end your life having worked so hard, only to hear from the Lord that you finished the wrong assignment. Your destiny, your calling, is tied to an assignment. You were created and redeemed to fulfill an assignment. It would be a tragedy to spend your life doing all the good things you do, like non-Christians who work hard only to find out that their works will not accrue to anything in terms of their eternal destiny. But even as a believer, we can be very busy doing great stuff on the wrong assignment. There's a great tragedy today that many people are, even as Christians, living their lives without fulfilling their destiny. Seinfeld had a group of drama students were analyzing Seinfeld to see during its series why it was so popular. They came back with their conclusion that Seinfeld was fundamentally plotless programming. It meandered without a link from scenario to scenario, and they concluded that the reason why Seinfeld was so successful is that plotless people love plotless programming. That it was the emptiness of the program which drew the emptiness of people. It's like the man who said, I was dying to finish high school so that I could go to college. I was dying to finish college so I could start my career. I was dying to get married and have a family. I was dying to have children. I was dying for them to become 18 and leave. I was dying to retire, only to discover now that I'm just dying. Never quite sure why I'm living. And that's why so many people spend a lot of their lives wearing a jersey with other folks' numbers on them. Because they don't have a jersey with their own number on it, because they've got a piggyback off of someone else, because they've not yet discovered why they are here. And so to choose this subject of destiny, of calling, of a sense of purpose, to not spend whatever time you have left living a decaffeinated life, a life with no lead in it, a life that is more like the flicker of a candle than the brilliance of a noonday sun, a life that has purpose because you're fulfilling your divine design. And that's why I love one verse that I will use to summarize, I hope, your pursuit at whatever time you have left of your destiny. And that is Acts 13:36. And David, after he had served the purpose of God for his generation, fell asleep. And David, after he had served the purposes of God for his generation, he fell asleep. The true story is told of Hank Aaron and Yogi Berra when they were in a preseason baseball game between the Braves and the Yankees. Hank Aaron, the home run king, came up to the plate, and a good catcher tries to distract the batter. He said, "Hank, you can't hit. Your mama can't hit." Then he said, "Hank, the insignia, the writing on the bat, you've got it turned the wrong way," trying to get him to focus on the bat. But Hank wouldn't budge. He wouldn't look at the writing on the bat. He just kept looking at the pitcher. True story, the next pitch that came down the pike, Hank Aaron hit it over the center field fence for a home run. Hank Aaron ran around first, ran around second, ran around third, touched home plate. On his way back to the dugout, he paused. He looked back at Yogi Berra and said, "Yogi, you just might want to know, I didn't come here to read. You see, if you don't know why you're here, you'll be distracted by the voices that surround you from your purpose for being at the plate. Your destiny may be defined as your divinely ordained reason for being that will bring God the greatest glory and influence the greatest expansion of his kingdom. No matter what your specific assignment is, it will always come under that umbrella of the biblical definition of purpose or destiny. Your divinely ordained reason for being that will give God the greatest glory and will support the greatest expansion of his kingdom." We're told three things in this verse about David. First of all, he served the purpose of God. Your calling, your destiny, will always serve God's purpose. There are a lot of purposes out there. They are the purposes of people, possessions, power, pleasure, position. You sprinkle a little piety on there to make it seem okay. But God's purpose will always have God at the forefront of it. It will always serve what he's about and will always expand what he's involved in. David served the purposes of God. Now, most people spend their time wanting God to serve their purposes. That's why you hear so much about being blessed, nothing wrong with being blessed, but we're to serve the purposes of God. I remember when my kids were small and I would go start traveling and speaking, and I would go at the airport, at the store at the airport, and buy a little something, a toy, and bring them back, something from my trip. They were excited when I came in. They ran and hugged me, and then I gave them the gift that I picked up at the airport store. But after a while, they wanted to know when I was leaving again, because they knew that that meant that there might be a blessing coming home with me. On the front end, it used to be about me. On the back end, it became about them. You are here, I am here, we are here to serve the purposes of God. Now, there are benefits that come from that service. But God never meant for the goodness he brings home to us to replace him. To serve the purposes of God. David served the purposes of God. He was not a perfect man, we all know that. But his legacy The thing that is left behind in the New Testament about this Old Testament imperfect person was that he served the purposes of God. Some of us have televisions in our kitchens. If you have a television in your kitchen, most likely it's a small screen TV. It's a TV you glance at while you do other things. While you cook or eat or wash the dishes, you look over there at the TV if you have one in the kitchen. Now, if you really want to focus, you go to the den because that's the big screen TV. Far too many Christians have God in the kitchen of their lives. He's in the vicinity while they do other things. While they build their careers or make their money or enhance their names. While they do wonderful things in the kitchen, they glance God's way on Sunday. Or maybe they glance God's way while they have devotions, while they do other things. Well, God is more interested in being the major set in the den of your life, where the planets of your activity revolves around the centrality of the sun of his purpose. David served the purposes of God. I shared how I love to go to New York. On one occasion, we went by Saks. Now, if you've ever been by Saks, you know that they have magnificent display windows. And they put mannequins in the windows, dummies on display. These dummies are on display, put there by the owners of Saks, because they know they're dummies like us walking up Fifth Avenue. And what they want is they want the dummies on display to be an attraction to the dummies walking up the street, to draw the dummies from the street into a kingdom called Saks using the mannequins in the window. Whatever God has done for your life, your family, or your business, you are dummies on display. He didn't just put you there so that you could look good in the window, so that you could impress yourself. He put you there so that you could serve the purposes of the one who put you on display, so that you would become an attraction to those passing by, that there's a kingdom that you represent that offers floor after floor after floor after floor of so much more. David served the purposes of God. We all have appliances in our kitchen. The appliance does not determine its purpose. The refrigerator doesn't decide it wants to refrigerate. The stove doesn't decide it wants to cook. The can opener doesn't decide it wants to open cans. The toaster doesn't decide that that's my purpose. That was the manufacturer's job. The manufacturer knitted it together, put it together, constructed it so that it would fulfill its purpose. And the moment that the refrigerator stops keeping things cold, or the stove stops making things hot, or the can opener is keeping things closed, then it is not fulfilling its purpose. It is not doing what the manufacturer designed. We have a generation of Christians today who are not fulfilling God's purpose. They are not doing what God has called them to do because they become so self-absorbed with their own goals, designs, and desires that the purposes of God are being lost. That is why there's so much discouragement and depression. One of the main reasons why so many people, including Christians, are discouraged today is because they are living a life not fulfilling their purpose. Because one of the things that destiny is designed to do is to give you fulfillment in life, no matter what that purpose happens to be. David served the purposes of God. And when you are engaged in serving the purposes of God, that is, when you are engaged in fulfilling your divine design as the manufacturer has prescribed you to do, then the question of meaning is no longer a question, because now meaning is being given to you by the manufacturer, and it's not trying to be worked up by the appliance. David served the purposes of God. You walk on a beach, the sand is free on a public beach. That same sand will cost you about $25 a bag if you want to buy sand from the store and put it on a playground. That same sand will cost you about $5 a sheet when you put it with glue on paper and make sandpaper. That same sand in a computer chip in Silicon Valley will be worth $500. It's the same sand, but its usefulness has increased its value. There are a lot of Christians today who are of little value to the kingdom of God because they're not invested in it, because unlike David, they're not serving the purposes of God. It says David served the purposes of God. The second line says, when he served the purpose of God, there was, as the video said, an impact on a generation. It says David served the purposes of God for his generation. Let me tell you something about your calling, destiny, your design. It's always bigger than you. If it's only about you, it's not coming from God. All the way from when God created Adam and said, be fruitful and multiply, and then he said, fill the earth. I just finished the manuscript on a book called Raising Kingdom Kids. We did Kingdom Man, Kingdom Woman, and now we're doing Raising Kingdom Kids. And we start out the first chapter with the reason God gives us children. God did not tell Adam and Eve to have children so they could have lookalikes. He told them to have children so that the image of God could be replicated throughout history. That the purpose of children is the replication of the image of God as those kids are raised to reflect that image, start their own families, spread out over the earth so that the image of God would be spread earthwide. That is the purpose for children. It is because parents have lost this kingdom understanding of kid raising rather than a personal desire for childbearing that we have a generation that is lost. He says that when it comes to God's design, he told Moses, I want you to lead a nation. He told Abraham, I want you to build a nation. Because over and over again, he told Esther, you've been called to the kingdom, but not just so that you could live in a palace. You've been called to deliver a people. So if you're not thinking generationally, you're thinking too small. If you're not thinking about the next generation, you're thinking too small. He says, and David served the purposes of God. You know, you can watch television now and see bowling. You can look good as a bowler. Bowling today has become a sophisticated sport. You can get fancy bowling bags, fancier bowling balls, bowling pants, bowling shirts. And of course, there's a bowling style. You can be stylish as a bowler. You put your three fingers in the ball, you look down the alley, you cock the ball, you walk down, you spin it, you kick out the leg. But if that ball winds up in the gutter, you're a good-looking failure. Many Christians today are rolling gutter balls while looking good. They're looking at the part. They've got the bank account that says I'm successful. They've got the clothing that says I'm successful. The house says I'm successful. The power says I'm successful. But when it comes to divine purpose, they're gutter balls because there is no impact. For a bowler is measured by his impact, not his style. He says that you might serve the purposes of God like David and that you might impact a generation. A generation. You must think generationally. I must think generationally. David served the purposes of God. The Titanic, when it sank, 1,500 people died. But 1,500 people should not have died because all except a few of the lifeboats were only half filled. The problem was those who had been delivered would not turn around to grab those who were drowning. They said, if we go back there, those people are so desperate that they're going to bum rush this boat and they may flip us over. So most of the boats were only half filled. 1,500 people died because folks who had been saved and delivered didn't want to turn around and rescue folks who were drowning. You and I are living in a world that's drowning, and everybody in this room have gotten in a lifeboat. We've been saved and delivered, but there's room for more. And God expects you to deliver or make your contribution in delivering a generation. A generation of men and women, boys and girls, who it is evident in every category today are drowning. You ought to think generationally. You ought to think in terms of what can produce that which will have generational influence so that I don't end my life having worked on the wrong assignment. And so, David served the purposes of God. That raises a question, doesn't it? It's probably the question that you're asking if it is not clear what your calling is. How does one find their calling? Well, we established yesterday that actually you position yourself for your calling to find you. And the way that this happens is by God creating or leading you to the mixed master of purpose. Most major cities have mixed masters where the highways coalesce, come together, and cross each other. That's the mixed master. It's where the highways intersect. Throughout the Bible, when God was leading somebody to their destiny, he would create an intersection. He would intersect them. He intersected Moses, for example, with a burning bush. Over and over again, God created intersections. Saul became king because he was chasing donkeys. And God intersected him with Samuel, where he received his call and his purpose. So the question is, what does the intersection of purpose look like? Well, let me give you the ingredients of the intersection, which will always lead to your calling and your destiny. The first intersection will be one of passion. When God calls a man or a woman to fulfill his purpose, he creates a fire in them that they are unable to quench. It's a burn inside. It's like Jeremiah said, woe is me if I don't. It's like Jesus saying, the zeal for this house has consumed me. Like fire shut up in my bones, Jeremiah said, I can't shake this thing. God will give you always a fire for your purpose. It is something that is unquenchable in your soul to which you are not satisfied until you attach yourself to it. It's a burn, passion. The second thing that will make up this place of intersection for you to know that you're in the place, doing the thing, and making the attachment that God wants you to have in order to realize your destiny will be your experiences. The things that God has taken you through, be they good, bad, or ugly, and it usually includes all three. The good are the positive things that happened to you. Perhaps it was the family you grew up in. Perhaps it was the opportunity and education that you've been allowed to have. Perhaps it's the person you met who took you on a career course that has brought you to the place you are now. Those are the positive events. 13 books in the New Testament was written by the Apostle Paul, who had the privilege of growing up to be a Hebrew of the Hebrews, who understood the Jewish world completely, even though he was called to minister to the Gentile world, who had the privilege of studying at the feet of Gamaliel. So when God was looking for a theologian to set forth the course of the New Covenant and the New Testament church, he reached down to Paul, who had all of these attributes that fit for what God was looking for in writing the New Testament and setting the theology of the church. So do not disregard the positive, the legitimate positive things. They're part of the intersection of your experiences. But then there is the bad. These are the regrets you have, the mistakes you've made. All of us, if we could go back, will have some things that if we could do it all over again, we would have done it differently. But the beautiful thing about the sovereignty of God is that he can hit a bullseye with a crooked stick. He can make lemonade out of lemons. He can take messes and create miracles. Over and over, I told you yesterday, I'm doing this series on Hebrews 11, and when you look at that list, there's not a failure, there's not one in the bunch who didn't fail. It doesn't endorse failure, and it certainly doesn't alleviate consequences, but what it does say is that God can even use the mess to make the miracles. He told Peter, before Peter ever deserted him, and one of the greatest sins in the New Testament is called apostasy. Apostasy is the public denial of the faith. He told Peter, before Peter ever denied him, he said, "Now, Peter, before the cock crows, you will deny me three times." Now, I don't know about you, but if I heard Jesus tell me that, I would have found a Holiday Inn and shut myself in. Peter said, "No, no, no, not me, not me. They may do it. I love you more than that. I'm not going to betray you. Before the cock crows, before the rooster crows, you will have denied me not once, not twice, but thrice." And then he makes the statement before Peter ever failed. He said, "And when you are converted, strengthen your brethren." You're going to fail. I'm going to tell you when you fail. You're going to be converted, and I'm going to use your failure and your conversion to make you a better minister. And I'm going to tell you all that before you fail. He finds him around a charcoal fire. That's a very important word in the story at the end of the book of St. John, that he's cooking breakfast for Peter, who had reneged on the ministry. He had walked away from God, gone back to his old occupation of fishing. And he's cooking over a charcoal fire. Why a charcoal fire? The word charcoal is only used two times in the New Testament. One, when Jesus was cooking him breakfast. The other, when Jesus was over a charcoal fire denying him. He took him to the place of his failure, reminded him of it because it took place over a charcoal fire, brought him back to a charcoal fire to say the place of your failure is going to be the location of your usefulness. God is able to take messes and create miracles. So even the mistakes of yesterday can become the usefulness of today and the blessing for others in your tomorrow when you connect it with the purposes of God. And then there is the ugly. The ugly are the things that were not your fault that have damaged you. It was like the testimony last night from our special songstress. The things that happened to you, it wasn't your fault. You didn't ask for it, and yet you are the recipient of the damage. And you want to know why God let this happen to you. Why did God do this to you? He could have stopped it. He's powerful. He's sovereign, but he didn't. It's the ugly. It's the Joseph story. It's the story of a 17-year-old boy raised in a dysfunctional family, raised by a father who had 12 kids by four different women, raised by brothers who put him into slavery, and then just when it looked like his day had come, he's accused falsely of rape, thrown in prison. Then it looked like just when his day has come, the cupbearer forgets him in prison. For 13 years, he has to go through this journey of ups and downs. And for 22 years, it would take him before he could ever make that thing right with his brothers. Ah, but in Genesis chapter 50, when the ugly was staring him right in the face, his brothers who had messed up his life, supposedly. He says, "You meant it for evil. You did it on purpose. But while you were doing the devil's thing, God was taking your mess over me and doing his thing because he brought me to this place. And he brought me, here it is, to this place to deliver you and your children. He brought me to this place for generational impact." So it includes your passion, your experiences. It also includes the intersection of your giftedness. Every believer has been gifted. You've been given a capacity that God wants to use to expand his glory as well as advance his kingdom. And if that giftedness has only been used for the marketplace, if that giftedness has only been used to make money or to build a lifestyle or to expand the bottom line or develop the portfolio, if your capacity has never been invested for eternal purposes, then that means that you haven't understood the assignment. The assignment of that talent, that skill, was designed to be used by God for the advancement of His kingdom. And then there is the intersection of your personality. When you look at the writers of Scripture, you have the sensitive one, John, who would lean on Jesus' breast. You've got the leader, Peter, who loved to wear peppermint socks the way he loved to keep his foot in his mouth and would be the first one to talk. And you've got the deep scholar, Paul. You've got all these personalities. It shows up in their writing. It shows up in their habits. Why? Because God is not trying to make us unisex. He's not trying to make us all the same. He wants us to use our uniquenesses to advance His kingdom. And when these highways begin to cross, God will create an intersection. Perhaps for many, most, if not all of you today, it's FCA, but He will create an intersection. He did for me, raised in the inner city of Baltimore, Maryland. Wasn't much hope for this kid. But then God, in His grace, led my father to Christ, who led me to Christ, who let me become the first African American to graduate from Dallas Seminary, who allowed us to start a church that expanded, and now a national ministry through the Urban Alternative, where we're training, the goal is to train every urban, get every urban school adopted by a solid urban church that we help develop to provide mentoring, tutoring, and family support services for the at-risk students in those schools. Because I grew up in that environment, God never let me forget it, and there's a generation, particularly in our urban centers, who are fatherless, who needs God, says, I'm going to give a father to a father, fatherless, and a mother to the motherless. He didn't mean a floating spirit in Never Never Land. He meant He would work through His people to provide surrogate family. And the best place to do that is churches, because churches exist where schools exist. Schools exist where families exist. Church, school, and family. You get a dating service, you can touch every community in the nation without a federal program. And so that is my legacy. That's the intersection God has given us nationally. And FCA has a magnificent footprint all over this nation. And so the opportunity to make a difference for this generation. He closes by saying, and they fell asleep. He fell asleep. And David, having served the purposes of God for his generation, it is, he fell asleep. That's the Christian word for death, because we know there's no such thing as death. And by the way, if you fear death here today, you're fearing something that's never going to happen. You just need to know that. So you're fearing the impossible, because you do not die. Your soul relocates. The moment you die, you won't be dead long enough to know you died. Because to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. So there is an immediate transfer that is quicker than you can move your eyeball from one side to the other, which is quicker than a blink. So you never get to die, but you do fall asleep. That is, you end your tenure in history. Now you're going to die. We could fancy it up. We could make it look good. But the reality is, you're going to die. And the goal is not to be morbid, but it is to be real. It says, and David fell asleep. You're not in the land of the living on your way to the land of the dying. Actually, you're in the land of the dying on your way to the land of the living. Because from the moment you were born, you started the march to the grave. Ladies, in a week or so, you're going to get some flowers, I trust, for Valentine's Day. If your husband gives you a dozen roses, he will have given you a dozen stems of death that look and smell good. They will look good, they will smell good, but all you need to do is give it time. And time will cause them to wilt, the petals to fall off, and they will no longer live. No matter how beautiful your life is, no matter how well the scent is from all that you have, you will fall asleep. That's why the scripture says, teach us to number our days. Teach us to number our days, to apply them to wisdom. It is appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. You may be late for a lot of things in your life. You won't be late for that one, because you die by appointment. Now, I know you work out. I know you run. I know you go to the gym, and that may increase the quality of your life. It will not change the calendar, for you die by appointment. So the issue is to maximize the time you have left for the purpose for which you have been given it. Now, we don't really know who the old people are here today, because nobody knows their death date. So we don't know who's old. You could, if you're 50 and you're going to live to be 95, well, you're fairly young. If you're 60 and you're going to live to be 65, you're fairly old. But since nobody knows their death date, we don't know who the old folks are here today. But let's just use the law of averages. The average man in America lives to be 79. The average woman, about 74. I hate that. But the average woman lives longer than the average man. So let's just take the average death date, take your age now, and deduct it from that date. That will give you how many years you have left on average. Multiply that times 365. Now you can count your days. Throw away a piece of paper for every day you have left and watch it shrink. You will be reminded to number your days. A large percentage of the audience here is over 50. Based on the averages, we have less time ahead of us than we've had behind us. So you've got to make it count now. You've got to make it matter. As the story is told in Luke 12 of the man who built bigger barns because he was having a banner year and a banner season. And God says, but tonight your soul is required of you. And to whom will this stuff belong? Such is the man, Jesus said, who is rich in this world's goods, but who is poor toward God. I've shared before here at one of the other retreats that growing up in the inner city of Baltimore, my favorite game was Monopoly, because that's the only time I got to own property in the hood, is when I played Monopoly. Soon as we opened up the board, my eyes went immediately right to Boardwalk and Park Place, because my Trumpistic tendencies would rise, and I wanted the most prime property on the board. If I was able to get those two pieces of property, I became a real estate barracuda. And you couldn't tell me anything, because I'd start living large. If you came around my side of the board, you better skip me past go and collect the $200, because I don't make loans. I would then start my residential real estate profile with my green houses, therefore increasing the rent and value of my property. Therefore, being able to charge you more if you landed on my land. Then I would go downtown and get some rezoning done and trade in green houses for red hotels, like the Del Mar. Then I could really go up on the rent. So I'd be there in the inner city of Baltimore, Maryland, on Saturday evening, living large, because I'm playing Monopoly. I've got the money in my hand. I've got the cards representing the property in my hand. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. But then there would come that discouraging, depressing moment every time. And that was when the game was over. When the game was over, I'd have to put the cards representing the land back in the box. I'd have to take this money that meant so much to me and put it back in the box. I had to take the dice where I was living large and had luck had been a lady tonight, and I had to put it back into the box. And then the worst moment of all, I had to close the box. When I closed the box, that meant game over. One day, you and I will be in front of a church, and they will close the box. Game over. And on that day, when they close the box, the issue will not be what you left behind, but what you forwarded ahead. The issue will be what showed up in eternity that brought God glory and expanded his kingdom in history. And if you don't show anything forwarded ahead, because all your stuff was left behind, then you will have works that will burn up at the judgment seat of Christ, because you will have spent your life working on the wrong assignment. You say, but boy, maybe I've spent so much of my life not doing the right assignment. And boy, my days could be few. My wife's a great cook, and when my children were growing up on Sunday morning, she would get up early to cook the dinner. And I mean, she would throw down, she would do a really nice dinner on Sunday. Roast potatoes, green beans, cornbread, 7-Up cake. She would, throw down on Sunday. But she wasn't going to do that again on Monday. No, Sunday was it. On Monday, she became the leftover queen. See, she had taken the leftovers from Sunday and put them in Tupperware. She'd bring them out on Monday and reconfigure them. I saw her one day take a casserole dish, bring the leftovers out, chop up and dice up the leftovers and sprinkle them in the casserole dish. Then she grated some cheese and sprinkled the grated cheese over the casserole. Then she took some cream of mushroom and poured it over the grated cheese that was over the leftover that had been diced and chopped. She put it in the oven, heated it up, brought it out. That was the best stuff I have had in my life. Actually, it was leftovers in the hands of a master. You see, when you give God what's left, he knows how to chop it, dice it, pour a little cream of Holy Ghost over it, and still serve up a life worth living if you give him the leftovers. You've got some leftover days, months, and years. Whatever time you have left, make it count for eternity. His name was Thomas Anderson. His nickname was Neo. He was a computer programmer, part-time computer hacker. But one day, he got introduced to another world, a world called the Matrix, a computer-generated reality behind the world in which he lived. That world was wreaking havoc with his world. He is transported to meet a man named Morpheus. Morpheus tells him, "Mr. Anderson, we've been looking for you. We've been waiting for you." He says, "You see, back here in this world, in the world where you are now, there are powers that you never dreamt of. Back here in this world, there is a love relationship named Trinity that you never imagined. Back in this world, there is a collection of people living in a place called Zion that need to be delivered. Back in this world, there's an enemy named Mr. Smith who multiplies himself and is determined to defeat you. But in this world, you will experience a destiny and a purpose unlike you ever imagined. We've been waiting for you, Neo. We've been looking for you. And so Morpheus looks at Neo and he says, so you have two choices. In this hand is a blue pill. You take this blue pill and we'll forget all about this. You'll wake up tomorrow morning and all of this will seem like a bad dream. And you'll go about your plain old ordinary computer programming life. But Neo, in this hand is a red pill. You take this red pill, I'm gonna show you some things that will blow your mind. You will experience some things that will knock you over. You take this red pill, and we will welcome you to the real world. Neo took the red pill. Morpheus looked at him and said, now let's see how far this rabbit hole really goes. So I close my session to you today offering you two pills. You can leave here with the blue pill and go back to your plain old ordinary life. You'll get up in the morning, you'll go through the routine, you'll do your business, you'll enjoy your family. Nothing bad, you'll just go back home to your plain old ordinary life. Or I offer you this red pill. I offer you a sight in the world behind the world that you know. A world of purpose and of destiny, of eternal benefit and generational impact. I offer you the red pill. You take the red pill, and we'll see how far this rabbit hole goes. As Morpheus told Neo when he took the red pill, welcome to the real world.